WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. The Senate and House yesterday both passed a resolution introduced by Virginia's senators condemning white supremacists and calling on Trump to do so, too. VMI in Lexington says it will keep its Confederate statues, and investigative journalists discuss the state of their profession in the age of Trump. This is the WMRA Daily for Wednesday, September 13th.
Support for the WMRA Daily comes from Blue Ridge Community College, offering small classes, student clubs, sports, and financial aid while living close to family and friends. Registration for the fall semester is happening now at the Weir's Cave campus or online at brcc.edu.
The Chesapeake Climate Action Network, or CCAN, is sponsoring several days of protest this week in opposition to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline targeting state offices of the Department of Environmental Quality, or DEQ. Those protests include prayer vigils today at seven DEQ offices around the state, including in Harrisonburg. The protesters are appealing to Governor Terry McAuliffe to deny permits to build Dominion Energy's pipeline, which would carry fracked natural gas from West Virginia into Virginia and North Carolina and would cross protected wilderness areas and the private property of hundreds of landowners. WMRA's Christopher Clymer-Kurtz is following those protests, and we will hear his report on Thursday. The House of Representatives has approved a resolution condemning white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and other hate groups following a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville that descended into deadly violence. Lawmakers backed the measure by voice vote on Tuesday. It now goes to President Trump, who has been criticized for his response or lack of response to the August incident. Virginia Senators Mark Warner and Tim Kaine introduced the measure in the Senate, which passed the resolution earlier yesterday. It describes Heather Heyer's death in Charlottesville as a domestic terrorist attack and acknowledges two Virginia state troopers who died in a helicopter crash while monitoring the protests. The resolution urges Trump and his administration to speak out against hate groups that espouse racism, extremism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, and white supremacy. It also calls on federal agencies to use all resources available to address the growing prevalence of those hate groups in the United States. Also, Virginia Military Institute has decided to keep its Confederate statues, but will consider adding more historical context in light of last month's violent white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports the board of VMI met Tuesday and decided to keep its statue of Confederate General Thomas Stonewall Jackson and another meant to honor VMI cadets who fought and died for the Confederacy. VMI Board of Visitors President John William Boland suggested adding a plaque to honor cadets who fought for the Union. The violence in Charlottesville was sparked by far-right reaction to the city's decision to remove a statue of Robert E. Lee, and other Virginia communities are now considering similar moves. Finally, what is the state and future of investigative journalism under the new Trump administration? The Miller Center in Charlottesville invited a panel of prominent investigative journalists from The New York Times, ProPublica, and BuzzFeed News to discuss that yesterday. WMRA's Marguerite Gallerini was there.
I think that folks think that what we do is perhaps a little easier than it looks. There's some notion out there that we sit at our desks, the phone rings, there's some dark, deep voice.
Bannon here.
Yeah.
That's Michael Schmidt, a correspondent for the New York Times in D.C., who broke the story of Hillary Clinton's private emails.
You know, they give it to us and you type it up and you put it online. It's incredibly more complex and difficult than that.
Schmidt and three other journalists discussed what it's like to be an investigative reporter in the age of Trump. The first thing is, there's a lot of criticism to take in.
There's also two large megaphones that have a big impact on us, and the first being the president, who has used the media as a thing to attack, to build himself up. And the second thing is Fox News, which for almost two decades now has been blaring commentary about the mainstream media that is incredibly critical. Whether it's true or not, there's an enormous amount of people that watch that and take that in. And it's not something I think we've completely figured out how to respond to.
Criticism comes from the left, too.
If you do a story in which Trump spouts off and you repeat what he says and maybe the reader doesn't think you hold him accountable enough, then we get criticized for that.
Well, I think we just can't win, right?
That's Vera Bergen-Gruen, national security correspondent for BuzzFeed News.
You know, if you're just reporting in a certain way, then we get a lot of criticism. You're saying you're normalizing this, saying that we don't provide enough context into how unusual some of this is. And on the other side, again, they're like, why are you focusing there? There's nothing there. Why do you keep going there? Anytime you touch any of those topics, no side's ever really going to be happy with you. And I think the best example is Mike here, he uncovered the Clinton email server and also broke several stories about Trump. I mean, that's what a good investigative journalist does.
For Matthew Rosenberg, who covers intelligence and national security for the New York Times, this kind of criticism is particularly dangerous because it contains an element of censorship.
And it's a dangerous place for people on either the right or left to be saying these views are so terrible nobody should know about them. I think we're all probably for free speech absolutists up here.
A member of the audience expressed the concern that this panel was representing only one side of the political spectrum.
I know the Times would be viewed as a more leftward-leaning publication, but are any of you on the conservative outlet? I take that as a no.
No, I think the description of the Times is a liberal publication, but when I tell people I wrote the Hillary Clinton email story, that can sometimes rattle people because they're like, well, that's what the New York Times wrote. So as reporters on this story, we're out there following the facts regardless.
Stephen Engelberg, the editor-in-chief of the nonprofit publication ProPublica, provided an introspective thought.
I do think that subconsciously, journalists are people. And if a guy is screaming at you every day that you're the enemy of the people, does it have some kind of subliminal effect on how you come to work in the morning? Probably so. I mean, as an editor, I try to make sure that's not true. I try to be very careful.
We really do try and be fair and as balanced as one can be. Look, I do think there is an issue where the media is largely based in big cities. Not everybody is from big cities, but they've all relocated there, working there. So you tend to reflect the kind of values of urban America.
This divide between big cities and local journalism was also touched upon by Howard Witt, the Miller Center's director of communications and moderator of the panel.
So let's take it down to the local level, because there's such a divide between the resources that major national news organizations like you folks represent and the local newspapers that so many Americans still depend on to get a lot of their news. You know, we here in Charlottesville, we have one newspaper that is under incredible economic stress, and they get a hot tip about some big local story going on right now, and they don't have the resources to put against that.
Yes, we have a huge problem. The newspaper advertising model is dead. It seems to me that has now not become a civic good. It's become a commercial imperative. What that means is that newspapers have to move to a subscription model. And at the local level, that means you've got to create an absolutely imperative reason for people to buy the paper. And that means investigative accountability reporting. I mean, when I worked at the Oregonian, I used to say, could I just have from our readers one latte a week? If we could get there, I think there's hope. And at the moment, you're right. There's a big problem, and the problem is much more at the local level than the national level.
Unfortunately, the panel did not mention the importance of also supporting one's local public radio station. For WMRA News, I am Marguerite Gallerini.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicki. Thanks for joining me. Enjoy your Wednesday.